Welcome to Module 1 of the Foundations of Animal Assisted Interventions course. Before we get started with Module 1, I wanted to just take a quick second to introduce myself and give you an idea of how this course is laid out and what you can expect from it. So to start, I am Lindsay Wright. I'm a registered psychologist and a certified animal assisted therapy professional. I have been incorporating animals into mental health practice for well over 10 years now. And I absolutely love it. And I have seen firsthand, both professionally and personally, how amazing and how beneficial animals can be in different interventions. And so this course, the Foundations course, is intended for any health professional, any professional really, who would be interested in incorporating an animal into their program or practice. That could be teachers, physical therapists, occupational therapists, nurses, corrections officers, group homes, assisted living facilities. The list goes on and on. That's just a few. But my intention with the first course is to provide foundational knowledge. As animal assisted intervention starts to grow in popularity, which it definitely has been over the last few years, there is very little guidance and regulation around the incorporation of animals. And my intention with this course is to provide participants with that foundational knowledge, to take a look at some of the ethical considerations, some of the research that supports it, some of the research that questions it, to understand how animals could be incorporated, which animals can be incorporated, and to have a pretty good sense of how animal-assisted therapy and animal-assisted interventions can work. So this course is broken down into 6 modules, and my intention with that is to make it a little bit more digestible. Life is busy, and taking many, many hours out of the day to sit down and complete a training is hard. And if we can break them down into little sections that are easier to manage, then why wouldn't we? So there's 6 modules. Feel free to do them at your own pace. My intention is that you have time so you can finish module 1, and then you don't have to worry about starting module 2 until you have the time available to actually focus on it. Each module will focus on a different topic, and each will offer a chance for self-reflection and some self-study. And with that, let's get started. Okay. Module 1 is the Introduction to Animal-Assisted Interventions. You know a little bit about me so far, but it made perfect sense to introduce Penny to you as the primary facilitator of this course, as I have learned a lot of my skills and my knowledge around animal-assisted interventions from Penny. So Penny is my therapy dog that I use in my own practice. She's 6 years old. I fostered her when she was 1, and she immediately became a foster fail and joined my family very quickly, and then quickly became part of my therapy practice as well. She loves what she does. She brings a completely different energy and a completely different perspective into my practice and how I work with clients. And I have learned far more from her than she's probably learned from me over the years. So it is important to acknowledge her, because she will come up many, many times in this course, as I'll use her as examples and explanations for how therapy might work or how animal-assisted interventions can look. And again, I'm Lindsay Wright. I'm a registered psychologist. I own and run a group practice in Edmonton, Alberta called Summit Counseling Services, and that is where I do majority of my animal-assisted work. I work with Penny, but I also work with horses and cats and goats and minis and donkeys and fish and rabbits. I have quite a wide experience with different animals, and they all bring something unique and different into animal-assisted intervention. So it's pretty neat to see how a different animal can bring a different energy into the work. Let's move forward. All right, so module 1, we're going to focus lesson 1 on the definition of animal-assisted intervention, as well as terms commonly used in association with animal-assisted intervention. because it's not regulated, because there are no guidelines, there are many, many different ways of explaining or of terms that are used for AAI. Equine assisted psychotherapy, equine facilitated psychotherapy, equine facilitated wellness, canine assisted therapy, canine wellness, pet therapy, and we'll go over all those terms, but there's a lot of them out there, and hopefully with some guidelines and regulations in the future, we can start to just have a few terms that mean it instead of having all of these different terms that mean the same thing. So lesson one, we'll look at that. Lesson two, we'll look at the biophilia hypothesis as well as the human-animal bond hypothesis. Both of these hypotheses argue for why animals are a benefit to humans and why animal-assisted intervention is effective. And then lesson three, we'll look at the history of animal-assisted interventions. All right, before we get started, you may have seen when you're purchasing this course, the addition of the course workbook. So the course workbook isn't necessary in completing this course. You absolutely can get all the information you need from the video, from the PDF, which will be these slides in downloadable form for you, and from your own notes that you're going to take. So you definitely don't have to have it, but it can be helpful. The workbook will go along with each of the modules and allow for self-reflection questions. It also has some activities to work on and some additional readings. So if you're interested in the workbook, feel free to go back to the main page, on the Teachable website, and it's easy to just order it and have it immediately downloaded for you to add to your learning in this course. I think it can be pretty helpful if your intention is to get the most out of this course as you can. And as always with any sort of learning, being present and intentional in the work you're doing is important. So please take a minute to turn off your cell phone or put it on silent and allow yourself the time to finish this one module if you can. And as always, if you need any support or you have any question, you feel free to email me. I am more than happy to guide you in any way I can through this course. My intention with this course is to help you get the most out of it that you can get. So feel free to reach out at any point if you have any questions. The online platform also has a messaging board. So you're also welcome to throw out any insights, any questions you have on that, and learn from other participants as you go. Okay, module one. This module will focus on the understanding of the term animal-assisted intervention, as well as the terms associated with this approach. We will also discuss the hypotheses behind AAI, and lastly, we'll look at the history of animal-assisted intervention. Okay, so my little bubble's covering here. Every now and then you'll see this little journal icon, and that is a prompt for the workbook. So if you see the little journal icon, feel free to, at that point, take a look at the workbook and answer the reflective questions that are in there. Each module is pretty much set up the same way. So before you begin any of the lessons, there will be some prompts in the workbook. And then at the end of each module, there'll be prompts to self-reflect on what you learned in that module, and to write down any questions that weren't answered that you hope to have answered, and some of the activities that are part of this course will be listed in that workbook as well. So just take a look for this little journal icon to know when there's something to be looked at in the workbook. All right, here we go. What is and is not considered animal-assisted interventions? I don't even know where I put this little bubble of me. Either way, it's blocking something. Maybe if I put it over here. Let's try that. Okay. What are animal-assisted interventions? So essentially, animal-assisted interventions is the incorporation of any animal to aid in a physical, emotional, or mental intervention. AAI is considered a complementary intervention, which essentially means that it is added to a program that already exists. So I like to explain it as a spoke in the wheel. So if the wheel is improvement on somebody's physical health, mental health, emotional health, AAI is one of the spokes in the wheel. You usually are going to add it to whatever treatment plan you already have with whatever your goal is in mind for that treatment plan. Because AAI is growing in popularity and yet we don't have any regulations or guidelines, we have many, many terms that mean pretty much the same thing. So for the sake of ease and clarity for this course, we will use the terminology set out by Pet Partners, which used to be called Delta Society, to keep it clear as far as how we're going to define AAI and what AAI means. Okay, so animal-assisted intervention is essentially the umbrella term to encompass both animal-assisted activities and animal-assisted therapy. So for the sake of this course, we will call most things animal-assisted intervention because our intention with this course is to understand the entire intervention as a general concept, and we will then look at AAA and AAT separately under AAI, basically. Animal-assisted activity is how we describe incorporating an animal without a specific structured goal that includes that animal. So an animal-assisted activity is, an example would be when you bring a puppy to a school, when you bring a dog to a school, and the kids read to the dog. An animal-assisted activity is bringing a dog to a hospital unit, or some universities, which is fantastic, and I love that they do this. Some universities and colleges have dogs come during finals week and midterm weeks as a way to de-stress, basically. And I think it's a fantastic program. So all of those would be considered AAA because it's not goal-directed intervention. The only goal is to maybe increase comfort or decrease stress. There's no focused step one, step two, step three. It is the animal is here to improve the well-being in a general sense of whatever population they're with at that moment. Animal-assisted therapy is where the animal is incorporated to aid in a specific intervention or therapeutic treatment plan. This is more structured and has outcome goals in the sense that if you're using an animal to help with, let's say, physical therapy. So you're working with a client who's had a stroke and mobility is now limited, and your intention with the animal is to increase mobility, increase motivation, and probably increase self-confidence. And that might look like grooming. So your treatment plan and your for that situation would be grooming a horse to increase functioning in arms, walking a dog to increase mobility with walking, increase memory. So it might be remembering the dog's name, remembering the horse's name, remembering which brush is which. So that would be more of an animal-assisted therapy type of situation where the goals are to improve the group or the client, where the animal is a primary part of that, where it's an integral part of the process. So there are many, many other terms. Canine-assisted therapy, equine-assisted therapy, equine-facilitated psychotherapy, equine-assisted psychotherapy, pet therapy, animal-assisted mental health, animal-assisted mental wellness. The list goes on and on. All of these pretty much mean the same thing within regards to an animal-assisted intervention. Of course, canine-assisted therapy would mean using a dog, and equine would be using a horse. But they both fall under not only AAT, but they also fall under animal-assisted intervention. AAI can look different depending on the setting, depending on the population, and depending on how AAI is incorporated. So in some instances, there will be the client or clients, if it's a group, or the participants, depending on where you're at, a health professional, the animal or animals, and then a handler. So this is pretty common with a YALA and some canine programs where they're bringing a dog in to a hospital or a group home setting. And the intention here is that the health professional is able to focus on what is happening in the room, and the handler is the expert in the animal. And so their goal is to focus on the animal behaviors, and ensuring the safety of the animals and the participants. I don't think there's a right or wrong way to do AAI. This can look very effective, especially for some programs like equine programs, especially in groups, because you'd want more eyes, more focus on the participants and on the animals. One person may not be able to see everything that's going on. And some therapy places do riding, which adds a whole other element. In that case, you probably want to have a handler so that the health professional is focusing on the client or participant, and the handler is able to ensure that the animal is safe and okay. And also it happens if the, I'm moving me over because I seem to be blocking the text here. It can also be helpful if the health professional is not qualified. So if you would love to run an equine program, but you've never worked with a horse before and you have no intention in learning about horses or how to work with horses, you can have a handler, and where your focus is the mental health aspect or the physical therapy aspect, and the handler is going to be the expert in the animal. That's absolutely okay to do. You also can choose the other route of deciding that you will just learn to become experienced with horses and have the two hats, you're the handler and the health professional in that situation. So for example, I don't have a handler for Penny, because I'm experienced with dogs and with Penny in particular, and the expert of Penny would be me. So in that way, I'm the handler and the health professional, as I will focus on both the health and safety of Penny, as well as the health and safety of the clients and the work that we're doing. So yeah, that will look differently, but every now and then you might see the word handler, and that's what it is, referring to, is the situations where somebody is there that's an expert in the animal and is there to focus on the animal's safety and well-being. Okay. Additional terms associated with AAI. So service animal. A service animal is not the same as a therapy animal. And so therapy animals are also called co-therapists. Some call them certified therapy animals, but there is not really a certification that's universally accepted at this point, nor is it required. So let's start with service animals. So a service animal is specially trained in one aspect, in one task. And the goal is that they support a human through their special training. Service animals have to be very well trained to do what they do. And not only very well trained in one specific area, but also very well trained to be out in the public, to have balance and calmness and temperament. And service animals range. So there's dogs for impaired eyesight. There are dogs that can help with seizures. There are I can only think of dogs at this point. But that's the biggest piece, right, is dogs that assist in helping a human in some way. Therapy animals are different. They are considered part of the therapeutic process. They aren't necessarily required to be as specifically trained as a service animal is. They are required to have a good temperament and to have the general training in manners and safety. You can certify a therapy dog under the title therapy dog, but it doesn't make them a service dog, essentially, that they'd have to do the actual service dog certification to have that happen. And therapy dogs, or therapy animals in general, not only don't need to be a specialty trained as service animals, they also don't need to be as structured as a service animal would need to be. For example, Penny has been temperament tested, behavioral tested, and has the basic training to be a therapy animal. But she also has a lot of anxiety and separation anxiety. And we use that in therapy a lot. So they don't have to be, perfect. They don't have to be perfectly trained as a service animal to become a therapy animal. But they do have to have basic training and temperament tested to ensure that they're safe to work with different populations. And know your animal, right? If your animal is great to work with kids, but isn't great in elderly populations, that's important to know. Emotional support animal. Emotional support animal is seen as an animal that provides wellness to its owner. They're different from service animals. They don't have a specific task or a specific role. Their intention and emotional support animal's goal is simply to improve the emotional well-being of their owner. This gets a bit tricky these days because, again, there's not a lot of regulation around ESAs, and more people are wanting to have their animals be considered emotional support animals, which they may be, but they also may not be. So our second course, the applications of animal-assisted therapy, will look at what does that look like, because more and more clients are requesting letters to support them having an emotional support animal, which can be a tricky place for therapists and psychologists and counselors to be and to navigate. So we'll go over that in the next course as far as what it looks like to write a report or to support an ESA for a client or participant. And then pet. So, like they call it pet therapy, which I don't really like the term for. A pet is just a companion animal. They have no specific training required of them, no specific goals, except to be companions to their owners. They provide comfort. They still have a lot of positive associations. They have a lot of help and support, and they allow for social stimulation and a responsibility to another being. There's lots of amazing things about pets, but they aren't under the category of emotional support animal or service animal, because their goal is truly just to make the lives better of the people around them just by being. And that is the sort of the definition of pet. Okay, lesson two. Biophilia. Okay, so the biophilia hypothesis was developed by Dr. Ed Wilson, and he argues that there is a desire for humans to connect with the natural world and other life forms. This hypothesis is also one of the arguments to support nature-assisted therapy, that as humans, we have a innate tendency to connect with nature and to connect with other living creatures, which can absolutely lead to why animal-assisted therapy can be so effective. Human-animal bond is a dynamic and mutually beneficial relationship between humans and animals, and is often supported through attachment theory and humans' innate need for social connection. So the human-animal bond hypothesis basically argues that the relationship between a human and animal is beneficial to both, and that we both gain from having that relationship. And we'll go into attachment theory a little bit later, but definitely the piece of social connection is important here. A lot of animals are social creatures and require that social group, that social connection, and we are also social creatures. We require that social group, that social connection, and animals are one of our most effective ways of getting it. Okay. It is pretty interesting. The connection to nature piece. We're not going to go too deep into the connection to nature because that is more of a nature-assisted therapy topic. But it absolutely plays into role here. And a lot of programs that incorporate farm animals, horses, cows, goats, tend to also incorporate the nature aspect. Not only because you're outside anyway, it's unlikely that you have your horse inside in your office. And then you're basically adding two effective interventions into that program because you're using nature-assisted and you're using animal-assisted intervention. But there are a lot of studies that show how reconnecting with nature, being outside, has many great benefits to our physical and our mental health. And we'll explore some of the studies later on in one of the modules, but it is important to know that that's one of the arguments for it. I don't know where to put this little bubble. We just have to keep moving it. Some believe AAIs are effective as it allows for clients to develop a healthier attachment figure. So this might look like more... Sorry, guys. I'm sure that's probably making you nauseous. This might look like more of a theory that is focused on the mental health aspect of it, but it is important to note as well, right? So if our connection with animals is supporting attachment theory in that it allows us to connect with a different attachment figure, which is a huge piece to attachment theory, is having positive attachment figures. What better attachment figure than an animal? As they're very non-judgmental and very in the moment and not hard to please. Nature holds the key to our aesthetic, intellectual, cognitive, and even spiritual satisfaction. So that's straight from Wilson's book on biophilia, which will be listed as a link at the end of this module. Other terms associated with the two hypotheses we mentioned in this lesson. As we discussed before, nature-assisted therapy is also known as ecotherapy, and a growing area of intervention, a mental health concern, is eco-grief, which is getting much more prominent over the past few years. And so an amazing way to support eco-grief and to move through that is through ecotherapy. And anybody who's gone outside and gotten some sunshine can understand how quickly connecting with nature can do wonders for us. Need for social connections. Evolutionary psychology argues that humans are genetically wired to connect to others. History has shown that being with a group increased the chance of survival. Social connections of any kind can support this need. So this is a great tool in AAI as participants or clients or patients that struggle with social connection and social isolation can have an avenue where they can connect and they can have an animal, even just for a short period of time, can increase that or satiate that need for us to have a connection in any social nature. Benefits of human-animal bond. So this is out of one of the books, and they'll be listed at the end of the module, but increased sense of purpose, stress reduction, improved mood, increased physical activity. If you think about it, if you have a dog, you have to walk them, play with them, train them, which gets you up and out. Increased social bonds. It increases social bonds with other living beings as well as those around you. So yes, you increase the social bond with the animal, but you also increase the social bond with those around you who know the animal, who experience the animal, who have animals themselves. Other benefits: increased mood, increased healing and independence, facilitate connections with other humans, because it gives you a thing to connect on, right? If you're both working in an equine group, you're going to talk about the horses that you work with. If you're walking your dog and you pass somebody else with a dog, you're more likely to stop and have a conversation. And it allows for common interests with others. Huh? There you go. Okay, lesson three. We're just plugging away here. Look at this thing. History of animal-assisted intervention. So the incorporation of animals to improve health is not a new concept. Evidence shows AAIs were used in ancient Greece, medieval Belgium, England in the 18th century, and psychiatric institutions in the late 1900s. And then after that, Freud made mention of his therapy dog in his work, but AAIs began to be formally researched in the 60s with Boris Levinson, who did a lot of work with animal-assisted therapy in children. And his book will be listed in the resources at the end of this chapter if you're interested in how research began, formal research began in this area. And A.H. Fine's book will also be listed. It's the Handbook of Foundations of Animal-Assisted Therapy. I'm sure that's off a little bit, but it'll be listed at the end. It's an amazing resource. I highly recommend it, especially if this is an area you plan to pursue as a specialization and one of your skill sets. A lot of information in that book. And it continues to be updated. I don't know what edition he's on now, the second or third, maybe. But an amazing resource. I go to it all the time. Okay. So a couple of the stories from ancient Greek. They used horses to help improve the mood of severely ill patients. There's also some writings that have Greeks having dogs lick the wounds of injured people to clean them out. And then we have Belgium, where animals and humans were rehabilitated together in an attempt to help both through a mutual beneficial relationship. So it's not just about the humans in that one. They would have injured animals also, and the two of them together would heal and grow. York Retreat in England in the 1700s incorporate animals into treatment for the mentally ill. And then Florence Nightingale. And if you're interested in any of that, she's a nurse in a psychiatric unit and wrote some amazing stuff about how animals were helping in that unit. And so they use small animals to reduce the anxiety, improve the mood of mentally ill children and adults. It has by no means been the intention of this writer to indicate that pets are a panacea for all the ills of society or for the pain involved in growing up and growing old. However, pets are both an aid to and a sign of their rehumanization of society. They are an aid in that they help to fill needs which are not being met in other, perhaps better ways, because society makes inadequate provision for meeting them. In the meantime, animals can provide some relief, give much pleasure, and remind us of our origins. So that's straight out of Boris Levinson's work and his writings. Okay, so Freud incorporated dogs into his therapy. And interestingly enough, he didn't do this intentionally. He left his dog in the room with one of his child clients. And when he came back, the child was disclosing to the pet and was actually talking. And this was a child that was nonverbal or limited verbal capacity so far in their work together. So he found that very interesting. He also believed his dog could judge a person's character, could sense something in them, and he would use that to suss out and to do assessments on his clients. Forrest Levinson is also known as the father of AAT because he's the first person to put this out in the world as a need for formal research. And because of his work, research in this area began to be an interest. So his book will be listed at the end. It is an interesting read if that is an area of interest to you, especially if you want to figure out or learn about how it all got started. It's an old book, but going to the source is usually a really good place to start. Other areas. So Pet Partners used to be Delta Society, are very well known internationally for their research, for their programs, for their support of animal-assisted interventions. It is a great website to explore and learn more about. They have the certification for your dog to become a therapy dog. That's where you'd get it if that's of interest to you. And then Dr. Aubrey Fine is well known for all of his work with animal-assisted interventions, and the handbook on animal-assisted therapy is listed in the resource. Highly recommend it. Amazingly written, very well organized, a lot of good research for and against, and a lot of great areas of consideration are listed in that book. Okay, move the bubble again. Okay, so as we said before, animal-assisted intervention is one of the tools. It is a complementary tool to a program you already have running. Now, that might be a teacher is increasing reading skills in students, and they incorporate a dog to aid in that process. So the goal is the reading for students, and the addition of the dog is just a complementary intervention to get to that goal. Rarely is it seen as its own individual intervention. Not to say it can't be, but it's usually meant as a way to increase the effectiveness of a treatment plan that's already happening, that's already in the works. AAIs need this less. So while an AAT program requires that, you need that to be considered animal-assisted therapy, that goal, that intervention piece, AAIs are less structured. They can be used standalone, and that would look like having a dog go to a post-secondary education or institute for finals and midterms. Because there is no goal there. It's just bring a dog and feel better. Things that aren't considered. So if you're a therapist or counselor and you have your dog lay on a bed in your office, that isn't considered animal-assisted therapy. You may consider it an animal-assisted activity if the intention is the dog just being there helps calm people. But unless the dog is actively involved in the process, that would go under an AAI more than it would an AAT. Okay. Well, that is all of the lecturing I will do for Module 1. Let's look at next steps. I'm never going to find a good place for this bubble. Okay, what you'll need to complete this section. So this is the self-study section to go over everything that we just covered in this module. So what you'll need is a course workbook, a pen and way to read the written material, whether that's a laptop, your cell phone, your call, you'll likely need internet or some data access to get to the links provided here. So step one will be to review the resources listed on the following slides. Step two, explore the resources listed that are relevant to you for the self-study section. And my intention to make this as informative for as many different professions as possible, a lot of these readings will be specific to something, PT, OT, teachers, whatever. So feel free to read them all. They're all very interesting, very informative, especially if your intention is to be very knowledgeable in this area, which I would suggest everyone be if your goal is to incorporate an animal into the program. But if you don't want to read them all, pick the ones that are of interest to you and explore those. And then for step three, you're going to take some time for self-reflection and self-exploration. So this is your chance to go through the workbook and review any questions you may have had before you started this module, see if there's any left over, and go from there. So here are some readings for you. You got your Biophilia Hypothesis. It's a book. The Human-Animal Bond Research Institute is a website which explores that hypothesis and what that means. Handbook of Animals as a Therapy, which I highly recommend, also goes into the human-animal bond a lot for more information. Pet Partners, or used to be called Delta Society, is, we talked about previously, that's where you can get more information about some of the studies that are happening, find out different programs that are occurring that incorporate animals. Forrest Levinson's work. And these articles, so if they're underlined in the downloadable PDF, you can just click the link and it'll take you straight to the article. The ones that aren't underlined can easily be found on Google Scholar. You can just copy and paste it in and the article will come up for you. But these are intended to give you more information on the history of AAT. And some of our roadblocks that we're hitting. So Animal Assisted Therapy Brief History is a great resource that will go into some detail on how far back animal assisted interventions have gone in our history. And then a couple little studies. So the frontal brain activity one was very interesting. If that is an area, if the medical side of AAI is interesting to you, if that's an area you enjoy, I'd highly recommend that one as a self-study reading. And then more on the history. And then your last step is the self-exploration and the self-reflection section. So once you've completed the module video, which you're currently doing, and the self-study section, which we just went over, spend some time exploring your own feelings and thoughts about what you have learned. Find the module one self-exploration section in the workbook and answer the question prompts. So a quick recap. In this module, we looked at what animal-assisted intervention is and what it isn't, different terms associated with it, the hypotheses on why animals can be an effective tool in health intervention. And then we looked at the history of AAE, where it comes from. Animals are born who they are, accept it, and that is that. They live with greater peace than people do. All right, what's in module two? So we are going to look at understanding animals, which is the title of section module two. So lesson one, we'll explore some of the more commonly incorporated animals into AAI. Lesson two, we'll look at the importance of understanding animal behavior. So why it's necessary to, even if you're going to have a handler, why it's necessary for you to have at least a foundational knowledge of your animal, of learning behavior, of operant conditioning and classical conditioning and understanding how learning happens. You don't have to go into too much detail if your plan is to have a handler because they will be the expert for your animal, but it is important at least for competency's sake, for you to understand what animals you're incorporating and specific traits to them. And so you've chosen an animal for your program, now what? So in lesson three, we'll discuss the important steps required before incorporating an animal into your program or practice. If you have any questions, feel free to send me an email, or you can put them up on the forum on the online course thing. You can also, well, first here's a link for all of the books that we've mentioned in the entire course, as well as the AAT course. So if you just want a full general link to all of them, feel free to click here. Applications of AAT, as we discussed, once you've completed this course, if the psychotherapeutic approach to animals is your focus and your interest, I highly recommend moving on to the advanced course, as this course alone won't give you enough competency, and that gives you a chance to have some consultation hours and discuss with other colleagues. You're also welcome to join our Facebook group. It's a fantastic community. We give a lot of suggestions and questions. If you don't want to ask me directly, you don't want to write in the forum, you're more than welcome to go to the Facebook group and ask any questions you have there. Any of the people in the Facebook group would be happy to support you in your learning of AAT. So feel free to click on the link, and that'll take you where you need to go. And that is the end of module one. Let's move on to module two.